Hi there, everybody. Welcome to The Principal Entrepreneur. I'm your host and author of the upcoming book, How to Be a Great Principal, Jonathan Royce. This is episode 54 of The Principal Entrepreneur, where we support educational leaders with tips and suggestions that help answer the question, how do I become a great principal? I'll also interview principals and school leaders just like me and you and discuss their areas of expertise and how they overcome the challenges within their schools. In today's episode, we are blessed to have one of the nation's most respected and inspiring educational leaders, Principal Kafele. We'll take this whole episode to list all of his accomplishments, so I'm just going to give you a few brief highlights. Principal Kafele is one of the most sought-after educational speakers in America, as evidenced by his 1,000-plus keynotes. He's a thought leader and originator behind the concept of the attitude gap, which describes the differences between those with the will to achieve excellence and those who don't. He is the author of 8 books, including his national bestsellers, Closing the Attitude Gap, Motivating Black Males to Achieve in School and in Life, and The Principal 50. He also dropped his newest book, The Teacher 50, just last year. As always, I'll provide links to his website, principalkafele.com, and to those books on the corresponding post on my website, theprincipalentrepreneur.com. Principal Kafele, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Good to be here.
Like I said, I am really pleased to have you. I've been reviewing your stuff and just checking you out online, and kind of where you're at is where I aspire to be. So I'm honored to have you on the show.
Yes, sir.
We're going to talk about your bestseller, The Principal 50. But before we get there, I just wanted to kind of figure out what's your origin story and how you even got into education.
Yeah, give you the quick version. You know, growing up in East Orange, New Jersey, as a youngster, things were well, but the wheels started falling off in middle school. And by the time I got to high school, I was in bad shape. So ultimately, I stopped going. I'd pop in every now and then. I'm on the streets. I'm infatuated by just being out there. So long story short, I went back to school the following year because I had a mom that was just so upset by the fact that her son was making bad decisions and she was losing the son. So went on and we moved to another part of New Jersey, a suburban section as opposed to where I was, which was highly urban, and graduated high school in 5 years instead of 4.
Right.
I played sports, and that was what kept me there. I played basketball and ran track. That's what kind of kept me there. Graduated. Guidance counselor told me I'd never amount to anything the day before graduation, and that stayed with me, I guess, and went on and did nothing for the next 5 years. So from the period of 1974 to 84, I did nothing. So at 84, went to school and stumbled upon 2 books. I stumbled on one. It was called The Killer Black Man, a book about the lives of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. That book was a game changer because I was introduced to 2 men who symbolized manhood, and I didn't know what it was to be a man until I read that book. So I was 23 going on 24 the next month and calling myself a man. By the time I finished reading that book, which was in one day, I knew that I could no longer call myself a man.
What was the name of that book?
Read that, went on and read everything I could get my hands on the lives of those 2 men, Dr. King and Malcolm. And at the same time, my grades began to improve to the point where I became an instant A student. So 4.0 grade point average. And the reason was because I was discovering myself. By learning these 2 men, I was being introduced to who I am as a young man. So I continued to read history. I wanted to know what these 2 men knew beyond just knowing them. I said, who are they? What do they know? So that introduced me to African American and African history and African Caribbean history. And I'm reading all this history and I'm introducing myself to myself. So at that point, I said, man, I don't want to do in life what I went to school to do. And that was, I studied business. I said, I want to teach. But, you know, I guess I shouldn't get way ahead of myself. But that's my story in terms of what got me to where I am today. I had to stumble on Malcolm. I had to stumble on Dr. King to become Principal Kefele, right? So it was that awakening of who I am as an individual, which put me on this trajectory that I'm on right now to this day in 2017. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention one other book within those readings, and that was the book, The Miseducation of the Negro, written by Dr. Carter G. Woodson in 1933. And it was reading that book, but more so reading a paragraph in the introduction that was just an eye awakener. It awakened me in a way that I had not been awakened before, because this paragraph said, when you control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his actions. You do not have to tell him not to stand here or over yonder. He will find his proper place and he will stay in it. You do not need to send him to the back door. He will go without being told. In fact, if there is no back door, he'll cut one for his special benefit. His education makes it necessary. Once I read that paragraph, once I read that book, I knew what I wanted to do with my life.
So those,
become an educator.
So those two books started the snowball rolling in terms of becoming an educator.
Absolutely.
That's some powerful reading. If you were going to kind of distill your readings from those two, do you feel like you kind of thematically pick those kind of readings as a reader, or are you all over the place as a reader?
No, I'm very focused in terms of what I read. As far as the history, initially I was all over the place in terms of historical reading, all over the place in terms of African centered reading. So whether it be in continental America or United States or Central South America, Caribbean, Europe, Asia, and obviously Africa, I'm reading all this history because I want to gain all of this that was literally kept away from me and everybody else when I was coming up. I always say that's the missing ingredient. You know, everybody's asking the question, what's going on with young people, African-American young people, and you know, all these different answers and theories as to why. But my go-to it always is because they don't know who that is in their mirror. Mm-hmm. They do not realize the power that is within them as it relates to history and culture. So, and I will stand on that until my last day, that until these kids can answer the question, who am I, we will continue to see the plethora of problems that we see across the country. So I can't blame them for the fact that they don't have this information. I got to blame those who are keeping it away from them. So by me discovering it by way of stumbling on the information, because I literally, let me just give you the specificity. I'm in a library on the first day that I went to a four-year school, an undergraduate school, Kane University in New Jersey, K-E-A-N. I go to the library the first day only because I feel like I gotta do life differently now, because the library wasn't a place that I would normally frequent. So I go to the library. I'm walking the aisles in the library saying, just take a book and read it. And I'm walking, but I don't want to take a book because I'm not a reader at that juncture of my life. So finally, there's a book that's partially protruding on the shelf. I take that book because it's protruding on the shelf. And that was that book, To Kill a Black Man. Had I not gone in that library that day and seen that book sticking out on the shelf, I don't know that I'd be the man I am today. Right. I took that book off the shelf and read it only because it was sticking out. And I said, wow. I sat down and it changed me with the turning of each page.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm that guy to this day that took that book off the shelf, because the guy that started on page one was not the guy that finished the last page of that book.
Right.
That was a new guy. And that's who I am to this day.
So my question, you mentioned the challenge of students and black males in particular trying to discover who they are and that being their challenge. How does that reflect itself for you when you were a principal? What was your biggest challenge as a principal?
Well, I knew I needed to infuse that kind of information into not only curriculum, but into the culture of the school. So the question became, how do you pull that off in a public school?
Right.
And I did. You know, we had a superintendent who was visionary at that time and came into East Orange and turned it into a magnet school district. I mean, same kids, you know, the entire city is 90% free and reduced lunch. The entire city is African American with a sprinkling of a Latino population, and then a Caribbean population, but it's a black city. So I said to him, I said, once he made me principal, I said, can I add a component to our theme, which was science and technology? He said, what's that? I said, African-centered studies. Can I make curriculum African-centered, since that's who these kids are? But not only the curriculum, but the entire experience. He said, go ahead, but I'm going to hold you accountable. So we became, the name of the school was Sojourner Truth Middle School. Sojourner Truth, not because of magnets or anything, that's just the historic name of the school.
Mm-hmm.
So it became the Sojourner Truth School of Science and Technology when he introduced the magnet. When I got there, and through the African Center Studies, it became the Sojourner Truth Middle School of Science, Technology, and African-Centered Studies. So now we went and infused African-centered curriculum instruction into every subject area in the building, but also created classes that focused on African-American and African history. So, for example, at the sixth grade and eighth grade level, we had a course that I wrote the curriculum for called African-American History 1 and 2, used a book written by the great scholar, author, educator, Malefi Asante, Dr. Malefi Asante of Temple University. And then we had a seventh grade curriculum book, a course, I should say, called Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization, that we wrote the curriculum based on the work of Tony Browder, who wrote a book of the same title, Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization. Then there was this African-centered theme of the school and, you know, speakers that we brought in, programs and so forth. And test scores went through the roof. And folks said, how is that so? And I said, because we made learning relevant. So math became African-centered because that was the student body.
Right.
Science became African-centered. Language arts, you name it, because that was the student body. So now children were in classrooms seeing themselves in the learning. The biggest challenge for me was when I left that district and went to a district that was 30% Latino and 70% African-American. I couldn't approach it that way because I can't create distance or alienate my Latino population.
Right.
So now I'm still going to do a lot of the same thing, but I'm going to take into consideration I've got a different student body now.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line was being culturally responsive to everybody, despite the fact that I've got a different student population now. And when we're culturally responsive, culturally relevant, culturally appropriate, and culturally sensitive to the students in the class, the same way a company that sells a product is going to be relevant to the market that is trying to sell its products to, we said, let's be relevant to the students that we are bringing instruction to every day. And hence, we were able to still achieve the same results as a result of being culturally responsive to the learners in the school.
How did you, or how did your staff respond to that change?
They responded well because I'm coming I'm coming as an authority. I'm not coming as someone experimenting with something new. So therefore, like a here we go again response from a staff. I'm coming to staff to say, look, here's something that works and makes sense. So when you're selling it that way, to say to staff, it makes sense, and here's how.
Mm-hmm.
Staff has no option but to buy it because it does make sense.
Right.
We're saying, like here's an analogy that I use initially with a staff, whether it be my staff or whether it be my audience. I say to staff or an audience, if I take a group photo of you guys, just take out my cell and take a group photo of all of you, chances are, matter of fact, I'll ask the question, who are you going to look for first if I duplicate the photo and give you all a copy or email it to your phones? Who are you going to look for first? And they all say, myself. They're going to look for themselves first. Exactly.
Right.
So in the classroom, that photo comes in the form of curriculum and instruction. So I will take a sheet of paper when I'll do an example for my staff or my audiences. I'll say, look at this sheet of paper. Here's the photo that I send to you guys, and here's you in the photo in this blank sheet of paper. I said, youngster, he or she sits in the classroom, but their photo doesn't look like this. And then I put about 10 holes in the paper. I say, their photo looks like this with these little holes in it. I say, their photo has holes representing where they stood when the photo was taken. So now they receive a photo with these holes in it saying, We didn't see fit to keep them in the picture. So now youngster says, teacher, why did you rip my image out of the photo? So now we take that to make the analogy. Youngster sitting in the classroom saying, where's me in curriculum and instruction? He's not going to articulate it that way. He's just going to sit in the classroom knowing that there's something foreign about this lesson, something irrelevant about this lesson, something about this lesson that when that dismissal bell rings at 3 o'clock, it has no relevance whatsoever to my life. I'm saying to teacher, I'm saying to my audiences, that's your kids in that classroom that lacks cultural responsiveness, that classroom that lacks equity, where I'm not there. Let's make sure that this student sees him or herself in the lesson, in the textbook, in the discussion, in the conversation. Let's make sure that what we teach, that youngster can see that there's a correlation between effort today and success later on in life, or effort today and after the dismissal bell rings at 3 o'clock, that I still see the relevance of what I'm learning, and thereby it matters to me. But if we're not relevant, if we're not responsive, then that kid is sitting in that classroom saying, what's this got to do with me? Because my world that I go back home to after school, after 3 o'clock, may not necessarily look like this dream you're trying to sell me. So I don't see the correlation between me working hard and this dream you're trying to sell me, because that world I'm going back home to, a lot of folks in my world didn't get the fruits of education, and thereby what I see as my reality.
Absolutely.
I want to change that reality.
Absolutely.
I want that kid to be able to see that by me putting forth maximum effort in this classroom, there are rewards later on. But I got to see the relevance of what's being given to me every day in class.
And that cultural competency seems to be your major point in spreading that message. You got to be able to recognize your kid. You got to be able to see them, and you got to be able to figure out a way to reflect them in the curriculum. And looking at your book, The Principal 50, are those themes woven into those questions? What do you hope principals will gain from reading this bestseller?
They are. Those themes are more so in a book that I wrote called Closing the Attitude Gap. And that book is really my heart and soul. We talk about Let me just, even though we're talking about the principle 50, let me just outline these five strands, which are part of comprise a framework. The strands are environment for learning, attitude towards students, relationships with students, compassion for students, and then that last piece, relevance in instruction, and that's where that whole cultural component comes in. In the teacher 50, we're looking at 10 areas of leadership that make up these 50 self-reflective questions. I say that
in the principals
and assistant principals, which included today here in North Carolina, talking to assistant principals all day long, that there's this film that we've got to look at every day called game film. And me being a former athlete, but an athlete at heart, I'm saying to administrators that every game, professional, collegiate, high school level, the teams, after they play, they don't just go out on the practice field and start preparing for the next opponent. They hit the pause button and they review film of themselves. So I'm saying that to the principal in the Principal 50, you have got to review your film. You've got to analyze, dissect, break down your game film. And that's by way of self-reflection, the mirror. Self-reflection, self-assessment, self-adjustment. So I'm throwing these 50 questions at principals on a regular basis saying, let's spend the day, like today, let's spend the day studying our film. So these questions I throw at them, such as the questions in the Principal 50, they make folks feel uncomfortable deliberately. They make folks feel a sense of uneasiness and tension. And I say to them, it's deliberate. I want you to feel uneasy. I want you to feel discomfort. I want you to feel tension as you look at you. Because I want you to dig deep, look at yourselves, and ask yourselves the question, am I engaged in these activities as it relates to making my school better? And that's what that Principal 50 is all about. And the cultural piece is a component of it, but it's not the totality. You know, we're looking at instructional leadership. We're looking at the attitude of the leader. We're looking at school climate, school culture. We're looking at school brand, the identity of the school. We're looking at leadership identity and leadership mission and leadership purpose and leadership vision. So there's a whole host of different areas that I kind of outline within the book for a teacher, for a principal to look at oneself and say, where do I need to improve? Where do I need to become stronger? Where do I need to become much more competent as it relates to my overall leadership?
That I just bought the book today and was going through it, and that brand piece that you talked about, school as a brand, I think is fantastic, especially in today's kind of market where you're trying to market your school and compete against other schools and charter schools and those types of things, figuring out what your brand is and what it means and being consistent and staying on message, everybody is really important when it comes to attracting students. They got to know who you are and what you stand for. And I think that brand piece in the Principal 50 is really spoke to me today. I have a staff meeting tomorrow where we're kind of talking about what our vision is. And that branding piece in that book is good reflective questions, and I appreciate them being in there. So thanks.
Thank you.
And you got 50 questions in there. I guess one of my last two questions is, if you were to give some advice to the first year's principal, assistant principals, based on your experience, is there one question or one piece of advice that you would kind of boil it all down to and say, this is what you can build on to be successful?
Yeah, you know, my go-to in talking to school leaders is always this question: what is your leadership identity? In other words, you know who you are as an individual, as a person, you know, your name and what that means. But I'm saying that when you walk into that building, you're not necessarily the same person you are at home. You know, you might be husband or wife, you might be parent, you might be brother or sister, you know, depending on the dynamics of home. And then when you're with your friends, you're whomever you are. But I'm saying when you put on that principal's hat, when you put on that principal's uniform, so to speak, what are you morphing into to the extent that what does your presence mean in that building? When young people and staff see you, they see what? When they think of you, they think what? Just your presence in the building, it shouts out what? And a lot of times, in fact, I would say most of the time, when I pose this question to leaders, it's like a deer in headlights, so to speak, because most of the leaders I've spoken to, whether it be aspiring leaders or practitioners, they've never really given thought to what is my identity as leader of the school. So I say that your identity, you know, it evolves throughout the course of a day relative to you as a person. But when you're in that building, what is it that your identity that you wanted to convey to your staff? So I use myself as an example as we build the conversation. I say to them, you know, there's a lot of hats that I wore as a principal, but the one that I wanted folks to gravitate to, the one that I wanted to matter most, was my identity as a motivator. I knew that there were kids going home to situations and conditions that were so abject that there was staff in the building that if they were asked to trade places with students for one day, they couldn't last in the shoes of the students for 10 minutes. So if that's who's coming into the building every day, I need to position myself in a way that I can get my kids fired up, that I can get kids motivated, excited, fired, inspired about being in the building, about themselves, about learning and the prospects for their future. So when they saw Principal Kafele, I wanted them to see a guy that just kept them fired up, a guy that makes me believe in myself, a guy that makes me believe in the prospects, a guy that makes me believe in the possibilities. So I wanted to be that guy. So my identity, therefore, was one of motivator. When you saw Principal Kafele, you saw a guy that made you believe in the possibilities, a guy that made you believe in yourself, a guy that made you believe that learning was a vehicle for me to get to where I wanted to be. So that was my identity as principal. I'm asking principal in my audience, what's your identity? Who are you? When those kids see you, they see what? Do they see disciplinarian? Do they see authority figure? Do they see boss? Or do they see something much more substantive? See, what do they see when they see you? And that question, it evokes a lot of discussion, but at the same time, I guess the oxymoron, it creates a lot of silence. Mm-hmm. I gotta get people to talk because now people are going deep thinking, wow, who am I? I never thought about that. I don't know who I am. I don't know my leadership identity. And that creates discomfort. Because it causes people to dig deep into discovering, in many cases for the first time, who am I as leader of this school?
Yeah, that's definitely a theme, kind of throughout your whole educational piece is finding out the answer to that question, not only in yourself, but then you've discovered that, and then you're turning around and asking students and now adults and leaders who they are within their roles. And it's, I got to tell you, man, it's good stuff. You're still the motivator.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. So my last question for today is, you know, you mentioned the two books earlier. What are two recent books that you've read that have really inspired you and that you would recommend to the audience?
Yeah, one book, and I wish I had this book in front of me because I don't have the exact title. I'm reading it, but don't have the exact title. But the author is from up there where you are. Her name is Dr. Antoinette Pearson, and I left her book on a plane. That's what happened. I was reading it and got tired, fell asleep, put it in the back, in the pocket, the seat pocket, and left it there. And now I got to tell her to send me another copy. But so outside of that, there's a book, and I'm just not good with book titles these days, but there's a book by a principal by the name of Nadia Lopez. She's a principal as well from Brooklyn, New York. And just to the listeners out there, Google Nadia Lopez and Google Antoinette Pearson. And it's a shame I'm not good with titles, but I never have been.
No worries. Those two books written by principals,
practicing principals at that, are two that really jump out at me. And then there's another one that I read recently, and then this one I do know the title. It's called Overcoming the Achievement Gap Trap. And there's another one up there by you. That's Dr. Anthony Muhammad. He's up there in Michigan. And that's his newest book, and that's a book that really inspired me as well. In fact, Dr. Muhammad inspires me. Very intellectual principal, and now he's full-time consultant like myself. But Overcoming the Achievement Gap Trap, you know, we talk about the overcoming the achievement gap. He's saying the achievement gap trap, that we need to change the language in terms of this thing, because it's not an achievement gap, because these kids are brilliant.
Right.
You know, so those are three books. And again, Antoinette Pearson, I wish I knew the name of that book. And
we'll find it.
And
we'll find it.
Lopez, they're both principals. In fact, they're all three of them are principals. Except Anthony Muhammad, you know, he's a full-time consultant, but he's a long-time principal.
That's it, man. I appreciate you taking these minutes out of your busy schedule to talk with us and share your knowledge. I can't tell you how honored I am to get an opportunity to talk to you.
I'm honored to talk to you.
So that's it for today, man. And until next time, thanks for stopping by.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
All right. Have a good day. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Principal Entrepreneur with Principal Kafele. A couple of takeaways from the interview. He likes to ask the question or pose the question to students and staff and have them ask the question, who am I? The advice that he has to give is to make sure that you are being culturally responsive with your student body, and for school leaders and teachers, I'm sure the piece of advice that he has is hit that pause button and review your film. So take a look at your practice. Are you walking and talking and being who you say you're going to be? That is it for this episode of The Principal Entrepreneur. Please take a second and give us a rating and review on iTunes and Podomatic. And until next time, thanks for listening to The Principal Entrepreneur.